and welcome to Fade Out, the podcast that examines the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights. Proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly. Our subject this month is screen legend Burt Lancaster. Born in 1913, Lancaster was a natural athlete as a child, which led him to a career as an acrobat with his friend Nick Cravat. They were quite successful until an injury forced Lancaster to quit. After serving in World War II, he found his way to acting in a Broadway play. The play only ran 3 weeks, but he was spotted by Hollywood agent Harold Hecht. Hecht was so confident in Lancaster's abilities that he promised him that if he went to Hollywood, they'd be producing their own films in less than 5 years. Lancaster's first movie was 1947's Desert Fury, but his second, Robert Siodmak's The Killers, was released first and was a huge critical and commercial hit, making stars of both Lancaster and the female lead, Ava Gardner. Lancaster then starred in Jules Dassin's brutal prison drama Brute Force, followed by the film noir I Walk Alone, starring Kirk Douglas. It too was a big hit, as was the adaptation of Sorry, Wrong Number, with Lancaster playing opposite Barbara Stanwyck. This led Hecht and Lancaster to form Norma Productions, beating Hecht's promise by several years. Norma signed a three-picture deal with Warner Brothers, and their first film was 1950's The Flame and the Arrow, a swashbuckler featuring Lancaster's pal Nick Cravat. It was a huge hit and changed the public's view of the actor, turning him into a full-blown leading man. This led to another action-adventure film, 1952's The Crimson Pirate, also a huge hit. It seems like everything he was involved with turned to gold. One of the films Lancaster's company produced, but he did not appear in, was 1955's Marty, which went on to win the Oscar for Best Picture. At this point, Burt Lancaster was one of the biggest movie stars in the world. During this time, he achieved what would be cinematic immortality by starring in 1953's From Here to Eternity, for which he was nominated for Best Actor. He co-starred with Gary Cooper in Vera Cruz, Katharine Hepburn in The Rainmaker, and Kirk Douglas again in Gunfight at the OK Corral. He returned to his acrobatic background in Trapeze, co-starring Tony Curtis. He reteamed with Curtis for 1957's The Sweet Smell of Success, as different a film from Trapeze as possible. He played the title role in 1960's Elmer Gantry, about a con man who becomes a preacher, which would win him the Oscar for Best Actor. He moved on to The Young Savages, a crime drama, which would be his first of several films with director John Frankenheimer. He followed that with Stanley Kramer's Judgment at Nuremberg, and then Birdman of Alcatraz, for which Lancaster was nominated for another Best Actor Oscar. In an unusual move for a star of his stature, he went on to Italy to star in Lucio Visconti's epic The Leopard, which Lancaster said was one of his favorite performances. He reteamed with Kirk Douglas and John Frankenheimer for the political thriller 7 Days in May, and then had another big hit with 1967's Western The Professionals, starring Lee Marvin. He appeared nude in 1968's The Swimmer, an adaptation of a John Cheever short story that played on Lancaster's athleticism. He scored another huge hit with the 1970 disaster epic Airport, which Lancaster himself called a piece of junk. Nevertheless, it was nominated for Best Picture. In the 1970s, now an elder statesman, Lancaster would reteam with Visconti, work with newer directors like Robert Altman and Bernardo Bertolucci, and directed himself in the 1974 crime thriller The Midnight Man. He earned another Best Actor Oscar for 1980's Atlantic City and appeared in the 1983 cult classic Local Hero as an oil executive obsessed with the stars. He did one more film with Douglas, 1986's Tough Guys, and then in 1989 played a small but pivotal role in Field of Dreams, which would prove to be Lancaster's final cinematic appearance. Here with me to discuss Field of Dreams and the career of Burt Lancaster are the hosts of the Perf Damage podcast, Charlotte and Adam Barker. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you both so much for being here. I'm a huge fan of the show, and this is just so thrilling to get to have you on my little show.
Thank you for having us. We love talking about Burt Lancaster, or at least I do.
Yeah, and just movies in general. So
that leads perfectly to the first thing I wanted to ask you was when I have somebody on the show and I, you know, let them decide who we're going to discuss, when they pick someone who is before their time, like their career was, you know, pretty much over before you, the person picking them was around, it always makes me wonder, what was it about Burt Lancaster? There's a million other movie stars to pick from, you know, aside from the ones that are contemporary with us. So what was it about Burt Lancaster that his work really popped to you guys and made you want to discuss it?
Well, we had covered him before on our podcast, so we knew that we already had a lot of stuff that we could draw from and talk about. So it was sort of maybe lazy on our part. But no, I mean, it's just something.
I mean,
we
there's
do.
That and that he's like,
no, he's so easy to talk about because we do love his film so much. And I do think he's an actor that's not really appreciated for his full body of work. A lot of people think of him as the guy that's making out on the beach with Deborah Carr, or maybe the tough guy in The Killers, or, and I just don't think that people fully appreciate his full body of work and everything that he could do. So I think he is an actor that's worth talking about a little bit. So I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about him. I don't know. You might have different reasons.
No, I was going to say that the real reason is that he's Charlotte's secret love. He's number two in our relationship. He's always there in the background, and so he usually takes precedence over me.
All right, that's fair enough. Yeah, that actually that is something I wanted to mention at the top of the show is when I write these intros, first of all, I try to keep them as short as possible. Secondly, I tried to give these intros some sort of narrative, the displaying, kind of putting across the ups and downs of their career, like we did a couple months ago in the Burt Reynolds show, kind of, oh, he did this and then he was kind of lay low for a while and had some, and then went came back up. And yeah, try to tell somewhat of a story and keep the intro from just being a list of movies. But examining Burt Lancaster's career, as I mentioned, his first film that anyone ever saw of him, The Killers, was a huge hit. Everyone loved it. And that just, I mean, I'm sure Burt Lancaster would say I had ups and downs, but from the outside, it's like, well, no, then he just kind of went on to five straight decades of great movies. Yeah, I mean, there were some, not hits or whatever, or some unsuccessful films, but basically five straight decades of cinematic prominence, working with co-stars of the biggest screen legends in the world, working with great directors, and then he just ended his career on another big hit, and that was it. So it was like there was no narrative, kind of. It was just, yeah, he did five decades of amazing movies. Like, what a career!
And to have started acting so late in life, at least in the Hollywood sense, to have come here so late. A lot of people come here in their 20s or late teens, and he didn't do that, but he always kind of did things his own way.
Yeah, and what you're saying too is like even his misses, the films that weren't financially successful, are still like really good
I
films.
mean, Sweet Smell of Success, for one,
Yeah, I
was
mean,
a
that's my
huge,
absolute favorite.
but it was a huge
It
failure.
was a massive failure. And it's one of those films that has gone on to a legacy now. People think of it as a wonderful film or a great film, but it wasn't financially successful, didn't
No.
connect with an audience back when it came out.
Right, I'm writing this intro, right, and I realize I'm leaving out, half a dozen classic movies that I'm not mentioning, like The Train or The Rainmaker,
Oh man.
or Come Back,
Yeah.
Little Sheba, like all these things that I'm like, I just don't have time to list every single movie that he
Don't.
did, for Pete's sake. So I mean, he's in, as I mentioned to you off air, like he's in The Osterman Weekend, which is Sam Peckinpah's last movie. Like he's
Yeah.
just in these amazing things. So kind of like what we did for the Burt Reynolds show, when someone has a career of this enormity and there's so many great movies, and we obviously can't get to all of it because you would be a whole separate podcast just on Burt
Why not? I got
Lancaster.
all day.
Well,
Yeah.
okay.
We got nothing going Saturday night,
I'm
so yeah, let's just yeah. We'll just
sure
start at the beginning and
dogs
we'll
have got
work
to
our
be
way through
fed at
it,
some point.
It'll be 8 hours later.
But so I just kind of want to jump around a little bit and just ask to start with the two of you, like, what is one of his movies that you would say, you mentioned Charlotte, you feel like maybe he's slightly less appreciated, slightly less known than maybe some others that have, other stars from his time? What would be one that you would point to somebody if someone's like, well, all right, where do I start on Burt Lancaster? Because as I tried to hint at again in the intro, like the beach scene and From Here to Eternity, like kind of everyone knows that. It's a thing. It's part of the culture, and most people probably don't even know what it's from, but it's famous, and that to me is like that's the film that's made him this thing, like this sort of icon. But what would be something you would point to and say, this one is a really great movie, he's really great in it, and you may not know this one as well.
But I also don't think that that movie, From Here to Eternity, is one that most people think of as a Burt Lancaster film. Like, he
Probably,
was
yeah.
one of the leads, but he wasn't,
Why? Because Frank Sinatra won
Frank
the Oscar?
Sinatra won the Academy Award for it. I mean, even though he's in that iconic scene that everybody sees, I think a lot of people don't even know that's Burt Lancaster that's in the water. So that's what we mean by
There you go. There you
underappreciated.
But the film that got me obsessed with Burt Lancaster was Elmer Gantry. So that's the one that I always tell people to go to first, just because that one for me really is the one that made me want to watch so many Burt Lancaster films in such a short amount of time, just because he just embodies that role so much in that film. I don't know if that's one of the ones that you watched
It
recently.
is. It is. I. You know what? It's. I. They. Every so during the prep for this episode, my wife would sometimes come home or come into the room and be like, which one are you watching now? And I'd say Elmer Gantry, and I would refer to it as a video store movie. And what I mean by that is I worked in a video store in the 90s and I watched it then because we had everything. And I sent myself to film school. But as you get older, some movies you have seen so long ago that you don't remember anything from them, even
Right.
though you know you've seen it. And so it's like, I
Right.
never know.
Yeah.
Does that count as having seen it if the,
I mean, it does. Absolutely. I
my
don't know.
brain has turned to
You feel
mush,
like, yeah, you feel like you're seeing it for the first time and you forgot all the beats. I love that.
That's why I love revisiting films that I haven't seen in, 15 years or something like that. And then it's like, wow, I'm watching this fresh again for the first time sometimes.
I was shocked watching Elmer Gantry. First of all, I didn't remember that it was in color. That's how little I retained from the first time I watched it. I kept thinking of it as a black and white movie. No, it's in color. But I had forgotten. First of all, yeah, he is tremendous at it. You could see why he won the Best Actor Oscar because he's so full of life. Like he's just, it's like a big performance. It's a great performance, but it's the kind of performance you could see why the Academy would sort of notice it. But it's much more, much saucier than I remember it being
Yeah.
for a 1960 movie. I mean,
Yeah,
first of all,
well,
you've
you
got,
it starts with a warning. It tells you not to
Right.
let impressionable children see it. And then it starts with a quote from the book, which it says that Elmer Gantry was drunk. He was eloquently, pugnaciously something drunk.
Drunk,
It was,
yeah.
right, which is incredible. And what's one crazy side note about that whole thing was that he almost wasn't cast in that movie. I don't know if you know that story.
No, I don't think I
It
do.
was supposed to be Pat Hingle in that role.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Commissioner Gordon from the Batman movies.
Yeah, and Pat
Yeah.
Hingle got he was in an accident. He fell down an elevator shaft. And
Oh,
this
over
is a
50 feet. He
it's
was trying to
a
escape from an
he just
elevator
climbed
that
the
was, yeah.
elevator. Yeah, it's a true story. And he fell down and
Lost a finger
yeah,
and like had to learn to
massive
rewalk and
injury.
oh.
Yeah. And I can't imagine him in this role. I mean, having seen Burt Lancaster, I mean, can you imagine Pat Hingle sliding across the floor and
No, and
being
that's
great
the
in this?
thing. Like Burt Lancaster, one of the most amazing things about him is how physical his acting is. Like
Yeah, especially in this one.
it's and when he's quiet, it's the presence. There's this looming presence and power to him. And when he's boisterous, it's like he's dancing all over the place and sliding across the room. Yeah, he has a physicality to him that I think like someone like Tom Cruise is pretty much the only other person you could really compare him to,
I mean, it makes
Right.
sense that he's got the background as a trapeze artist, that he knows how to move his body, right? And he is a big guy. I mean, he's a broad-shouldered, very tall, but he can, yes, he can move in the frame in a very forceful but precise way. And the thing with Pat Hingle, like, I don't even understand how that works because,
I
like, Pat
know.
Hingle was not a movie star. So like I know a little bit about how film production works, and I'm like, I don't even understand how a movie could have him as the lead and then he gets injured and you get a giant movie star. Like that generally doesn't, usually you swap movie star for movie star, not
Yeah.
kind of unknown person for giant movie star. That's a very strange kind of like, level up sort of to get
Yeah.
Burt Lancaster all of a sudden in your movie.
Yeah.
But I mean, Shirley Jones, for anyone who hasn't seen this movie, I mentioned he plays a preacher, a con man who falls in with Gene Simmons, who is this evangelist. And then he kind of takes her, he kind of takes over her mission and becomes even more popular. Shirley Jones, the mom from the Partridge Family, plays a prostitute. She has a line in this movie where she's referring to her affair that she had with Elmer Gantry before he got famous. And she literally says at one point, "He rammed the fear of God into me." And I'm like, how did that line get by in
Went by the
1960?
censors.
Love it.
Yeah,
Like, what
amazing.
the hell? So, yeah, it's an amazing, and it's a 2.5 hour movie. It flies by. And like I said, he's in virtually every scene. The other thing I love about the movie, I loved Dean Jagger in that
Yes.
movie. I love Dean Jagger ever since I saw him in White Christmas, even though that's a very sort of atypical role for him. But I love that he does not like Elmer Gantry from the beginning. Like, he sees it. He
Yeah.
knows that Elmer is trouble, but Gene Simmons can't see it. And I love
Nope.
that he's just sort of always flittering at the frame, kind of being like, I don't like this guy and I don't like the way this is going. And of course, he's right. So everyone in the movie is just top notch.
Yeah.
And that's
Yeah,
a
I mean
Richard Brooks.
that
That's a
movie's still
Richard Brooks
powerful
movie.
today.
What? I'm sorry.
That movie's still powerful today. I
I,
mean, yeah,
it, you know,
resonates
feel
to
ripped
this
from the headlines and all that. And I was going to mention that's Richard Brooks, which he did, who he did The Professionals with a couple of years later, which is a terrific Western he did with. I mentioned the intro with Lee Marvin and Claudia Cardinale, Woody Strode, and Robert Ryan. That's another great movie. Okay, so Adam, what about you? What would be one that you would pick?
day. That people don't know about.
Well, we were talking earlier,
We were
this.
talking about sweets.
No, Scalp Hunters.
Oh yes, Scalp Hunters. That's a fantastic film.
Oh, now that one I did not see. Now what was that? I know it's a
It's a
Western, but what's
Western
that one?
directed by Sidney Pollack.
And it's not what it sounds like it
Yeah,
would
Scalp
be.
Hunters sounds
Okay.
like a it's what mid-60s. And at that time that's when all the
Think it's
spaghetti
68.
yeah, the spaghetti westerns were coming out and you with a name like Scalp Hunters you think it's going to be super gritty
And
and
like cowboys versus
right.
Indians, and
But
it's not.
it's not at all. It's a comedy. Let's see, who else is in it? Ossie
Ossie Davis
Davis,
is in it.
Shelley Winters, Telly Savalas,
Shelley Winters.
Oh, yes.
who is amazing in it. She plays a prostitute who
Okay.
wants to better herself constantly. So she's all about self-improvement, which is a comment on the 60s and the self-improvement movement. And Ossie Davis plays a house slave who is literally the smartest person in the room, in every room that he's in. Because everybody else is an idiot or a brute, and the only thing is that because of his learning, he is completely incapable of protecting himself in reality. He's been kept his whole life, so when he gets out in the real world, he doesn't know what to do and is faced with all kinds of problems. Yeah, it's a fantastic film.
Yeah, so you've got the black man who's educated, the white man who's uneducated, and then you've got the prostitute who wants to be educated, and they're all thrown together in the wild trying to survive, and it's just this misfit trio. It's so good. And we had a thing, I think we wrote about this, where JFK was a big fan of the production of this movie, and he was a big supporter of this, right? Wasn't
No, that
that,
was 7 days of May.
was that 7 days?
Yeah, that was 7 days of May.
What was this one?
No, 7 days of May.
I shouldn't have even brought that up then, because
Yeah.
that's one that I was on
You
my
know
list
what?
and I just ran out of time. Like you said, when he's had so many movies,
Yeah,
I
and
will
Scalp
just
Hunters
like,
is, yeah, it's an underseen movie in Sidney Pollack's career. It's an underseen movie in Burt Lancaster's career. It has a great cast. It's a allegory for the what is it, Black Power movement in the 70s. Ossie Davis learns to he finds his voice, and at
Wow.
that point, then he becomes an equal. It's really fantastic.
Yeah.
There's just a lot going on in the film, a lot more than
An allegory for the civil
yeah,
rights
civil
movement.
rights movement, not Black Power movement. Sorry.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
I will have to check that out anyway. One of the ones that I discovered that I had really was not familiar with at all, other than I knew it existed, was a movie he did with Judy Garland called A Child Is Waiting from, I think it's from 1963. And directed by John Cassavetes, an early John Cassavetes movie. And it's Lank for anyone who hasn't seen it, most people probably have not seen it. Lancaster plays the head of a school that is for educating kids with mental disabilities. And Judy Garland is a she's kind of at a loose end, and she shows up to teach to become a teacher at this school. And it's populated with real children who suffered from mental disabilities. There's some kids with Down syndrome and stuff like that. And so you've got Lancaster and Judy Garland and Ray Stewart from Citizen Kane. I always love it. Citizen Kane is one of my all-time favorite movies. So I always love it when somebody from Citizen Kane pops up in another movie. They're interacting with these real kids who, of course, probably a lot of them don't know they're in a movie. They're just reacting honestly. And I put it on, started watching it, and I was like, boy, this is going to be a kind of going to be a rough one, right? I mean, this is not going to be a fun watch. It's produced by Stanley Kramer. It's a social message movie. This is not going to be, it's not going
That's
to be.
exactly why we've never put it on.
Okay. Well, that's exactly what I want to get to is because I started watching it. And then, as I mentioned earlier, my wife came in the room and she was like, oh, what's this? And I told her, and within 3 minutes of her just sort of watching over my shoulder, she sat down and watched the rest of it all the way through.
Oh, it pulled her
And
in, huh?
yeah. And I said to her at the end of the movie, this is the kind of movie that you have to watch without knowing what it is. Because if, like, I just like you just sort of alluded to, Charlotte, it's the kind of movie that when you describe it, you're like, oh, that doesn't sound fun at all, right? That sounds like a brutal watch. And it's not a fun watch, but it is so, I found it to be so, and apparently John Cassavetes sort of disowned it because Stanley Kramer took it over and re-edited it, and they had a whole back and forth or what, yada, yada. But to me, it is such a beautiful movie, and it is presenting something never seen in a studio movie. And it's so beautifully rendered, and these children are presented with such dignity and care. And Lancaster is so good in it, and Judy Garland is so good in it. And it's the kind of movie where I'm like, if you just want to see a really great movie that is going to demand a lot of you emotionally. Again, I know that's no one's going to put that on when I say it like that, but it's very rewarding. It's a very rewarding watch. I'll put it there. And I was impressed that someone of Burt Lancaster's stature would like be in a movie like that, knowing that most people aren't going to go see that, right? Nobody wants to.
I
No,
think what you're getting to also is that that he was more than just a movie star. That's the thing. Like, a lot of people remember him as this kind of larger than life movie star, but he had a lot more going on than that,
He
you know?
did.
He always wanted to he very early on, like you said in your intro, formed a production company so that he could control the material that he was in. Because he got kind of fed up with Hal Wallace just kind of assigning him to films, and he got tired of playing the big brute in all of these film noir films. Very early on, he formed his own production company, and he would buy plays and he would buy books and they would develop them.
And not just for things for him to star
No,
in.
yeah, it wasn't just a vanity thing. Yeah, like most production companies that their star owned or and run are just to find material for them to star in. But he was interested in more in like getting that kind of thing out there. One of the movies we point to all the time about like this is Separate Tables. Did you end up seeing
I
Separate
did
Tables?
not. Yeah, I did not see that one.
It was a very popular play. And Sir Laurence Olivier is in it. There's a lot of like really great actors in it, but it is a play and it is a hard drama, and there's nothing fun about
It makes people
it.
topless all the time for Burt Lancaster.
It does, you know.
Personally, it's not one of my
Yeah,
favorites.
same.
Does not make my list.
Yeah, I also wouldn't put The Leopard on my list at all either.
Same.
I just think that movie is interminable. But
But it's also because they dubbed Burt Lancaster
yeah,
and
I watched it. I watched it for that reason, and then I'm like, well, he's dubbed, so I don't. You're not really getting a sense of the performance because it's not him talking.
Well, there is the version, the cut down version, where it's not him dubbed.
Oh, I
Yeah,
didn't see that one. The one I watched
the
was the
American one
three-hour
is
one.
almost an hour. It's almost an hour shorter.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and he actually they
Oh.
use him. The rest of the movie's dubbed, and his voice is actually in it. So,
Oh,
yeah.
wow. No, see, the version I saw on Apple or whatever is the 3-hour version, and I was like, I was enjoying it, but I'm like, well, okay, I'm just kind of looking at him at this point because that's clearly not
It's
his
just
voice that's
so
coming out of him.
weird, and I don't like the guy that they got to do it. Granted, I don't think I would have liked any actor that they got to dub Burt Lancaster because he's just got such a unique voice
Yeah,
and
I mean
I'm
his
biased.
performance in it is strong though, his presence. It's just, like I don't know why the movie has to be 3 hours and 5 minutes long.
Because there's a 50-minute ballroom scene.
Yeah. I mean it's sumptuously photographed, it's beautiful. That ballroom scene
Because it's
especially.
Technirama,
Yeah. But
aka VistaVision.
oh yeah, your
Gotta
favorite,
drop my
yeah.
VistaVision.
Did I
Yeah.
did.
And it's
Good
Alain
actress.
Delon and Claudia Cardinale, very pretty people to look at. Yeah, it's I guess sumptuous movie to look at for sure. So one of the other things I wanted to mention specifically was watching his earlier films, because you were talking about that, he had a sensitivity about, what material he wanted to appear in. But he was really good, especially when he was younger, at playing dumb guys. And I feel like not a lot of actors aren't necessarily good at that. They can't quite kind of turn that light off in their eyes. And so you can sort of see them like, okay, well, he's playing a dumb guy. I'm not really buying this. I felt like one of my favorite movies is Jackie Brown. Like Robert De Niro to me is great as the dumb guy in that movie, that dumb crook. Like he looks like he's barely paying attention to what's going on in any given scene. And Lancaster in I Walk Alone and in The Killers is kind of this just dumb, and in the early parts of Kiss the Blood Off My Hands, is kind of this dumb brute. And for a guy that we know is as smart as he was, I thought he was really good at that. And I guess that just makes him a great actor, is that he was able to do that. But it was fun to see him early on play this guy who's just sort of only half following what anybody is saying at a given point. And you were talking about his production company that, yeah, most stars get a production company when they're 10, 20 years in, maybe not that long, but 10 years into their career. But he was 2 years in. 2 years in, and he's producing his own films, and he knew what kind of material to put himself in. I thought, that is a guy who, and kind of what you're referring to, Charlotte, maybe it's because he was a little older. He was coming to it a little older. He had a better sense of who he was, as opposed to becoming a movie star when you're 20 and you're still kind of figuring out who you are. But I love all those early film noirs of him where he's just kind of this hulking brute. Those are
No,
all so fun.
and it's funny you mentioned that because on our blog that we were doing where we were trying to watch all the films, which I don't know if we mentioned, so we're trying to watch all the Burt Lancaster films. We tried to watch everything, which we didn't succeed at, but we were also blogging and writing about every Burt Lancaster film that we watched. And we had this little thing called the brute force radar or the brute radar, where we would actually talk about how many times he would get into fights and how quickly he would throw a punch because of exactly that. Because he was always getting into fights, he would backhand or punch or something. And I remember, I think in Kiss the Blood Off My Hands, I mean, it's, I think immediately he just gets into a fight and runs through the streets. And I think when we first watched that one, we thought this is going to be the best
Yeah. Plus, it
film
has the greatest title.
we've ever
Yeah.
seen. I mean, the whole beginning of that film just starts off so
Yeah, I think
great.
the first shot is him punching into the
Yeah, before
camera,
he
right?
says
Yeah,
anything,
yeah.
punches
Yeah.
someone before any dialogue.
Yeah.
And then he runs, and there's this great chase scene. And then Joan Fontaine shows up. And that's when the film goes bad, kind of. I mean, the film's not bad, actually,
It's also not one of his best
but they
either.
have zero chemistry together. And, bless her heart, Joan Fontaine, I love her, but they don't really work together.
For a title that is so lurid, is more of a soapy melodrama than you'd expect, right? Because from that title, you're like, oh wow, they're gonna,
From the opening too.
they're gonna
Yeah,
be they're gonna be
it
like,
promises way more than it delivers. We'll just put it that way.
No, he does. He gets in fights and things all the time. So on our blog, it was always the at the bottom there was the brute force, and we always talked about the fights or who got into fights in the movie. Sometimes it would be Nick Cravat if it was a Nick Cravat feature too, and he would get into fights more. But usually it was Bert. We'd always talk about the Bertie fights.
And there was always like a close up of him where he would be normal, and then his face, he would be like he would that he just had that trigger and he's just
Oh,
punching his way out of everything. That is, yeah, that I got that movie on. It's not available on streaming anywhere, so I bought the Blu-ray because I'd never seen it, and I was like, oh man, this is gonna be so bloody and lurid, and people are gonna be garroted and all sorts of stuff. And it was like, oh no, it's a lot of Joan Fontaine being weepy. I'm like, oh, okay. And I listened to the audio commentary, and apparently they did not like each other at all. So maybe that's why they didn't have any great on-screen chemistry or anything.
Yeah, I think she got pregnant during the movie and got sick or something like that. So,
Well, I
So
mean, at that point too, he was already starting to try to control every film he was in too. And so he was giving actors notes and they don't really like that. So
he wasn't trying to make friends.
yeah.
So
That's pretty much a through line his entire career. Most films, if you go into the behind the scenes, a lot of the actors didn't like working with Bert at all.
Oh man. Now, Charlotte, you mentioned Nick Cravat, who I mentioned in the intro, is his old friend, his old acrobatic buddy, and then he basically brought Nick Cravat to Hollywood. One of the films I absolutely needed to mention because I had never seen it. I was always planning on watching it, and then Adam, you mentioned it in the email when we were prepping this, was The Crimson Pirate.
Oh, so good.
And oh my God, is that a great movie?
Isn't that a fantastic film?
And I am frustrated that it is not more famous because I watched it. First of all, it was a giant hit. Like, it was a big success. But I watched it and I said, why weren't there five of these? Why was
Right?
this not
Oh,
his Indiana Jones? I mean, obviously,
we were robbed. They could have
yeah.
done way more. Yeah, he was fantastic.
It is so fun. Nick Cravat, by the way, is the sidekick, the mute sidekick, and he is hysterical as the mute sidekick. I love that Bert kept giving him gig. I mean, it's always like, you know, we see like, you know, the friend is in these movies and you're like, oh, okay, he's just kind of getting in there because of the movie star connection. But Nick Cravat's genuinely good. Like he's genuinely a good presence. But the Crimson Pirate, again, directed by Robert Siodmak, who they did The Killers with, showing they could do completely different kinds of movies. But the Crimson Pirate, for anyone out there who has not seen this movie, it is a wonderful family adventure film, a lot of humor, great stunts. The ending is this big knockdown, dragout fight at the end where there's like 40 guys all just beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah, like Nick Cravat punches the entire cast.
Yeah. Charlotte was like, yeah, I think he knocked out even the extra.
Every extra in the film is knocked out by Nick Cravat in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, you know what you're in for the second the movie opens and it's on him and it's direct address to the audience. Yep. He's already breaking the fourth wall. You're like in for like a really comic booky paper.
There's so many great gags with like the pirate with the peg leg getting caught
in the grate.
I think one of my favorite scenes of this film is the semaphore scene.
Yes,
it has one of the best semaphore scenes ever caught on film. And semaphore is the talking with the flags. If you're not familiar, there's not enough of those scenes in films.
Yeah, Charlotte's a big advocate for more semaphore,
more semaphores in movies. when they board the ship, and they're talking to that kind of foo-for-all captain guy. And he's like, the captain is like, well, there's 200 of us and only 18 of you, you know, you're going to try and take over the ship with only 18 of you. And then like one of the crew gets knocked out and falls into the frame. And the Crimson Pirate's like, well, that's 199. And then another guy falls and he's like, well, that's 198. And it just kept going. I was like, where has this movie been how have I not known about this?
It's so good.
You know? And I know that
It's really hard to find.
Yes. Yeah. Right. I mean, I know that Hollywood
had like a real release here in the United States yet. Like, you know how Kino Lorber's putting out a lot of his films right now? Yeah. Beautiful Blu-ray copies. We've replaced a lot of our DVDs that way. Crimson Pirate, for some reason, is one of those films that has not been released in the HD era.
Oh, so. Yeah. The print that I saw was clearly, you know, like a print of a print of a print because it's kind of washed out a little bit. But man, was that a blast. I couldn't, but I was laughing 5 minutes into it and it just stayed that way. And it even features him in drag at one point, which you would think might kill it. Good. And it doesn't. It still works. You know, it's just, oh, man, yeah, that is just – I know that Hollywood just wasn't set up to, like, sequelize everything back then. I mean, they had sequels, but it just wasn't the standard approach of, like, well, let's do Crimson Pirate 2. But I just don't know why they didn't think, you know, well, in between all these artsy things, just do another Crimson Pirate.
If you'd asked me for a top three films to introduce people – to Burt Lancaster, this would
be
in the top.
Be one of them for sure.
Yes,
and it's a great companion piece to
Elmer Gantry,
Flame and Arrow.
That one I did not see. The Flame and the Arrow. Now what?
So it's basically Crimson Pirate, but a little tamer. Came out beforehand. Cravat's also in that one. There's an amazing sequence with this 30-foot wooden pole. It's like almost Jackie Chan like. They find like all these inventive ways to use this 30-foot. Piece of, you know, timber. They're knocking people over. They're using it to climb up to second balconies. Like, I mean, it's amazing. It's so good. I would highly recommend that one too as a nice companion piece.
Okay. I'll have to find that. I'll have to watch that at some point. Yeah. That is just such terrific stuff. And it leads me to one of the things I had in my notes here is that Crimson Pirate is very funny. Like, it's an adventure film, but it's also a comedy. And apparently that it was the original script was like a straight drama. And when it got to Robert Siodmak, he just said, "None, this is so silly. I can't take this seriously." And they just took all that out and put on all the comedy. But it's for as long of a career that Lancaster had, a surprisingly little amount of comedy, right? I mean, like he does, he's in the Hallelujah Trail, which is a 3-hour Western comedy, which was a big flop. Maybe that's why he didn't do a lot of comedy.
Yeah.
Right.
But he was adept at it. Like, it's just interesting for how many films he was in. You can count on one hand the amount of comedies.
That was, yeah, there were straight comedies. Tough Guys in 1986.
Tough Guys. Yeah, that's one of the like the last thing he does. But yeah, it's like, and it's a shame because he's funny. He is funny. And you, Charlotte, send me this link, and I'm going to end the show with a little bit of audio from it. This musical number he does with Kirk Douglas at the Oscars,
Oh, isn't
which
that incredible?
I was not familiar. I'm saying, the Oscar, I'm not watching every Oscars going back since the beginning, but it's this musical number where the setup is they're reading their who's nominated for Best Actor, and of course neither one of them is on the list, and they're kind of jealous, and it becomes this musical number featuring references to all the actors. I mean, and Lancaster and Douglas show amazing fidelity with being able to sing, and like, you try and say the words Anna Magnani in a song and make it sound natural, and it ends with a thing where Kirk Douglas jumps up and stands on Burt Lancaster's shoulders. I was like, what am I? This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
I mean, the whole thing is it's great not to be nominated.
Yeah.
That's what they're celebrating. It's so fun.
That was, and it, that showed him like why, like he should have done more of this. This is really
I
great
know.
stuff. That
I
was an
know.
absolutely amazing piece.
Yeah. And
Absolutely.
then
Yeah.
only, what, like 2 years later or so, I think Burt Lancaster finally got his Oscar, but then Kirk Douglas never got his.
Yeah, Kirk never got
He
one.
got
He
one
got
for
nominated a
acting.
bunch, but never, ever won.
Nope.
Again, it
We got
seems
a,
like,
well, he got a, we don't count those. We don't count
the
those
honoraries, you
BS
don't count.
honorary. He got an
Right.
honorary one.
We don't count them.
That's fair enough.
He's up there.
Sydney,
I mean, Alfred Hitchcock and
don't count them.
Keaton also got one. So, honorary one.
Sydney Lumet never won an, like,
Yeah.
Pete's sakes, what are we
Chaplin got
doing?
one for song.
What are we doing here?
He did. He got one for song.
Okay, so I want to mention, and again, we're jumping around a little bit, but I do want to mention Airport because I had never seen Airport. I knew, its reputation as kind of this junky thing. And I knew that Lancaster, as I mentioned in the intro, he called it a piece of junk. It ended up being the most successful film. Like, it made him the most money because he had points
Yeah, he had
on it.
10%, 10%, and that
10
movie
per
made a 100
10%.
million dollars. Yeah,
10% in
10%.
1970 money. But we watched Airport. It was on Netflix. It's one of like the six movies Netflix has made before 1995. And it is not a good movie, but it is a delightfully fun chunk of cheddar cheese, right?
Oh,
It's
absolutely. It's so incredibly watchable, right?
Dean
Like,
Martin as a pilot, and he's having an affair with Jacqueline Bisset, and who's the bomber? Van Heflin, the big, and
yeah.
he's sweaty and bug-eyed and all this stuff.
Oh, and then don't you love like all of the they have to hit all of the big points in the 70s, adultery and like all the things that were kind of taboo to talk about, but they can now talk about them in the 70s. They're all packed in there in quick succession. And oh wait, hey, we have to mention this is like the introduction of him on the phone. Like this is his period in the 70s where he becomes the guy on the phone. Bert on the phone begins here. Yeah, I mean there's several films, Twilight's Last Gleaming, Cassandra, what's
Oh,
that
the
one just
Cassandra
passed away?
Crossing, yeah.
Cassandra Crossing. Yeah.
Was it the Midnight Man? Was it
No,
the
Midnight
one?
Man,
Yeah.
he actually is
Oh, he does
the
stuff in that movie. Yeah, he
Yeah,
actually
yeah.
does a
No,
lot of
what
stuff
was
in
the
that
one
one.
we watched the other night?
Twilight's Last Gleaming, where he's the guy on the phone. Yeah, I mean, he's like the guy on the phone in that movie, like the entire time.
Every time we saw a phone, we knew he was going
Well, it
for
was
it.
funny because it's like they were alluding to it because they would show a picture of a phone, and then they would show a shot of him looking at the
We
phone.
knew he was going for it.
Yeah.
Also,
The
that
guy
film
on the
also
phone.
features the goofiest cut-ins in
Which
any
one?
movie. They don't just do split
Twilight's
screen.
Last Gleaming?
Yeah,
Or
no, Airport.
Airport.
They don't just do
Yeah.
split screens where it's one person talking. They do little insets,
Yeah.
little
Yeah.
like the
Yeah.
shapes are funny. It's very distracting to have like
Yes.
a circle and a guy in the middle talking on the phone and whatever. So, but yeah, it's delightfully terrible.
Oh, I would highly recommend it to anybody. If you're not looking to turn your brain off and you just want to watch something that's, highly enjoyable, that movie is highly enjoyable.
It is. So speaking of the Midnight Man, this is, I mentioned that he, in the intro, that he directed it. It's only two films he ever directed. The other one was The Kentuckian, which I did not see. But
Didn't
then
miss
he,
much.
okay. So he did the Midnight Man. Now the thing, you specifically, Adam, mentioned that one that I should check out, and that one's hard to find. I had to go look on YouTube for it. But
Your old
I,
lover put it on a nice Blu-ray.
oh, did that? Okay. So the
Yeah.
poster, the original poster. This is what it's. This is in the original poster, and it's showing all the suspects: the ex-con, the senator, the sheriff, the hippie, the pervert, the professor, the sadist, the lesbian. One of them is a murderer. Okay, times have changed a bit. I think the lesbian as a sort of job descriptor, I guess, their character. That's an unusual movie. It reminded me a little bit of like a sort of like a TV murder mystery with just a lot of movie stars in it. I enjoyed it, but it's a strange movie.
Yeah,
What do you think of that one,
I
Adam?
think that was his attempt to get in on that that Charles Bronson Death Wish kind of film, you
Yeah.
know. Not that he's a man on a you know with a vengeance,
Right.
and a gun, but it's the action aspect of it, you know. Like, there's that movie Brannigan from that period too. Like,
John
there's
Wayne,
just
yeah.
everybody that was an older actor that was kind of out of favor with the young kids at the time tried to grab that back. And I think this was his attempt to do that. It was directed by one of his screenwriters too. And the only reason that they would make the film is if Burt Lancaster came on as co-director at the time. So,
Very strange.
yeah.
Yeah, it's an
Interesting
unusual
film.
movie.
Yeah, he
Yeah.
turns into a complete psycho at the end of the
Yeah.
film too. Like,
Yeah,
it's like, whoa, where'd this come from? The rest of the movie's like this measured, smart guy, you know, but he was in jail for accidentally shooting somebody. So,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, it's 70s in that he slaps a lot of women around in that one,
Oh, yeah.
and it's
Yeah.
just kind of like, okay, it's just sort of what it is. Another one I watched, the Robert Altman movie Buffalo Bill and the Indians, or Sitting Bull's History Lesson, I believe it's called. Now Bert is barely in it. He's kind of in the
Yeah.
beginning and then at the end. Now I like the movie, but my favorite scene in that movie is the one near the end where we finally see Paul Newman and Lancaster together. And Lancaster's character sort of talks about how Buffalo Bill is, in terms of the public's creation, public's view of Buffalo Bill, is a creation of the Lancaster character. And it gives Newman pause. He's literally about to take a drink, and then Lancaster says something and it stops him. And aside from that scene just being really cool because it's like set in, is in this like this room and it's all dark and it's just very powerful. But it's, I also just love seeing those guys together. Like, you never saw them in a movie together. You didn't do another movie together. So it was just really cool seeing these two giant guys. I mean, I'm used to seeing Lancaster and Kirk Douglas, but that was just neat to see them in the thing, in the scene together. It's just these legendary guys.
Yeah, it's like two generations
Yeah.
meeting, you know, facing off.
That's awesome.
Like
Pretty
a
soon.
big, yeah, it's like, you know, here's the big actor of the period before handing off to the big actor of the current period. It
Yeah.
was one of those kind of like, oh man, I can't believe we finally got this kind of moment, you know?
Yeah. One other thing that I wanted to talk about is that as I was watching through his filmography, and again, I thought it was a little unusual compared to some other people from his class, is that he seemed very comfortable in playing villains. And I don't think a lot of guys at his level were necessarily as comfortable with that. Like, he's got half a dozen movies where he is playing an out-and-out villain, not just a sympathetic, anti-hero, but like in 7 Days in May,
Oh yeah.
he's Curtis LeMay, who wants to take over the military,
Yeah,
the
he's
government by
trying to
force.
orchestrate a coup, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just thought that was, I don't know. I thought that was, again, it's like a guy who has a really great understanding of how audiences see him, and that he was comfortable shaking off the leading man thing to be able to play people like that. I mean, you guys were mentioning Twilight's Last Gleaming. He's, somewhat sympathetic in that, but that's a guy again who wants to set off nuclear weapons to make a point. And I just thought
Right.
that's kind of remarkable how many villains this guy put, more
Or
than I
in
would have expected.
Vera Cruz
Vera
is like
Cruz, right?
outright villain in that one,
Yeah.
shooting people in the back. And yeah, I mean,
I don't think he was someone that was really typecast. I think he could play anything because he could play a villain, he could play a leading guy, he could play someone who was completely kind of soft and kind, like Mr. 880.
oh,
You know, he's
yeah.
like the Miracle on 34th Street kind of character
Right.
where he's just completely kind and you buy it. I don't know. Like, I think as long as he could just disappear into a role in a way that a lot of actors can't.
Yeah, I think he actively worked against being typecast too.
Yeah.
I because of the power that he had over his own career and the choices that he made for subject matter. You know, when you said, "Hey, I wonder why he didn't make sequels." I don't think he would have ever made sequels. He was a
Yeah,
guy that
I
was always
mean.
looking for that next project, the next challenge,
Yeah.
something to be different, you know. He wasn't a guy that was would
He
be
didn't think
happy
of
being a,
himself as a brand.
right.
He, you know.
Yeah, I don't think he was trying to protect his
Yeah, I don't think he thought of himself as that way. He just thought of things that would be challenging, that would be good, that would
Right.
be fun.
Yeah, I mean he's a giant like shitheel in Sweet Smell of Success. I mean he's
Yes. I mean, you want to
unbelievable.
talk about like outright evil in that film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in a different way, right? Because like 7 Days in May, he's a big villain. He's trying to take over the government. Like, okay, you know,
Yeah.
that's a great movie. I love that movie, but that's a big villain piece. But then in Sweet Smell, which is before, many years before, he's small scale. He's just somebody who wants to destroy people because he's just rotten on the inside. And I love the fact that it
But
was
you
done
love
a
him
year
for
after
it.
Trapeze with Tony Curtis. It's like you could not find two movies more diametrically opposed in terms of what they're trying to do, how they look, how they sound, how they feel, and yet they've got the same two guys in it. I'm like, that's amazing.
I know, and Tony Curtis is actually really good in Sweet Smell of
Yeah,
Success.
usually he's kind of just like the New York Dumbo. Hey,
No,
hey, I'm Tony Curtis.
but he's so good in Sweet Smell of
He is.
Success,
He's
and this is
fantastic.
really his
Like you
movie.
feel the desperation. Like that
Yeah.
guy is just doing whatever it takes to keep his head above water. You know, he's yeah. You know, but it's like that movie. I like I said, it's my absolute favorite movie that he ever. The J.J. Hunsaker that creation. It's very rare to see something that well-rounded and despicable put on screen, and he doesn't shy away from the darkness at all in it.
Yeah.
He really taps into something.
I found that quote about The Leopard, where he Linklater said it was one of his favorite performances or one of his favorite films that he was in. And I didn't get a chance. He has there's a you know there's a biography of Burt Lancaster. I try and read them for these shows when I can. I just did not have the chance. Do you? I mean, he lived long enough to become this sort of iconic figure. So he lived long enough for his films to age into classics. Do you either one of you know? Did he was he able to appreciate some of the films that were maybe not hits, like Sweet Smell of Success? Because I know that a lot of people that are in movies, they can't separate if it bombed. Like
No,
no matter how much
he
you tell them,
did.
it's a classic. They're still like, well, yeah, but it, you know, okay.
Yeah, it didn't make me
With
any money. Yeah.
Sweet Smell,
Yeah.
he knew. He
He knew.
I've
Okay.
seen quotes about it where he talked about that one. He talked about The Swimmer, how that became a cult hit.
Yeah.
He kind of, you know, nobody understood that at the time, and
Yeah, he
you
was
know.
talking about
But Sweet
Sweet
Smell,
Smell,
he talked about
especially being a critical success after it came
much
out.
after,
Yeah,
but how it was
long
okay.
after.
Such a bomb, and it was the first one that his new production company released. The was it
Oh,
Heck
heck,
Hill
Hill Lancaster.
Lancaster?
Yeah, yeah.
that's when Hill came on in the mid-50s. Yeah.
That's great. That makes me happy, right? To know
Yeah.
that like he lived long enough to be able to say, yeah, but everyone's like, yeah, that's a masterpiece. Like, come on, you know, like who cares if it didn't make any money at the
Yeah,
time?
at least for that one.
Yeah,
That's
you know,
good.
I think he's was an incredibly self-aware human being. I think he knew exactly what he was doing at all times. And it was, you know, even though that wasn't a success, I know that he knows he made a great film and that his performance in it was strong. So.
That's good. That's rewarding, right? To know that, because it's like when we come to it, we don't it all, you know, you don't know whether it made money or not. What do we care? You know, it's just like, oh, it's just a great movie. It lives on forever.
Yeah, we call that
That
the HBO factor. Like growing up as a kid, you saw all these movies on HBO and you didn't know if they were hits or not. And 90% of the
Right.
time, they weren't.
You just assume they were
You
hits.
assumed they were
Yeah.
hits because HBO said they were hits.
Right.
You know, basically, it was just them getting movies cheap that failed at the box office. So you get this like kind of skewed perspective of what was like a big hit and what wasn't.
That's, you know, it's funny. That's another thing that's sort of like with the Kiss the Blood of My Hands. Like, you can't find it on streaming. You got to get it on the Blu-ray. It's weird how some of these movies fall through the cracks like that. And you think, oh, this must not be very good. And then you watch it, like, well, this was terrific. Why is this not available? When other stuff that's junk is available, readily available, like, this thing is great. Like, I had to go and track down a bunch of his movies on YouTube that I'm like, why is this not more readily available? And like, what? You know, I mean, I know there's the vagaries of the company who owns it and things like that, but it, when there's a movie that like you can only find on YouTube, I think there's, you know, it has that initial feeling of like, oh, this must not be very good because nobody's bothering to do anything with it. That's not true at all. That's just completely not true.
No, there are a lot of movies like that out there. Yeah,
Yeah.
unfortunately, you know, rights issues and independent, you know, things that were made independently, and then rights fall into all kinds of weird. And a lot of people are afraid to do anything with a film where the rights are not, you know, already worked out because they're afraid of getting sued. So there are a lot of films like that. There was this little horror movie called Spookies that for a long time wasn't available at all because the little production company that made it, everybody was dead and they didn't know what to do with it. And people had it, but it was sitting around and they just wouldn't touch it because they were afraid that somebody would come out of the woodwork and, you know, sue them for putting it out.
That's a shame. It's because like you were talking about things being on HBO when you're a kid and you're watching stuff on HBO, you're like, oh, well, you were just saying that must have been a hit because it's on HBO, right? It
Right.
must be, you know, well, no, that's not really how it works. And so the other stuff, I had to search long and hard for a bunch of Burt Lancaster movies. And that feels weird to me that like Burt Lancaster is in your movie, like Burt Lancaster, the giant movie star. And
Yeah.
yet this thing is like completely forgotten. And like one of the ones I'm thinking of, like one of his last films, he did this movie called Little Treasure with Margot Kidder and Ted Danson.
Yeah, we had
And
that on VHS.
yeah, it's not a great movie, but it's interesting. And
It's
it's
not a
nice.
bad movie,
It's not a
right?
bad movie. And it's nice to
Yeah.
see Margot Kidder in a starring part. And it's fun to see Ted Danson in a non Sam, you know, Sam Malone role. And like, it's only on YouTube. Like, you know, and it's just like, okay, this deserves a little more of a life. It's got Burt Lancaster in it, one of his last performances, for Pete's sake.
Right, that's like that movie we were talking about, Mr. 880. It's one of his early films, and that movie's unavailable on any home video.
Yeah.
So,
Is that
no,
what I
I.
didn't get to watch that one? Is that what you mentioned a little bit? What is that exactly?
It's just this movie about this man who's a he starts counterfeiting, I think,
$1 bills.
$1
It's
bills.
based on a true story.
Yeah, so just to pay the bills that he's delinquent on, but he does it in a he's a really kind old man, and it's a really charming story. I mean, when I say it's like Miracle on 34th Street, I'm not joking. It
Yeah, it has a
really
lot of
is.
that kind of
It's a
magic.
holiday story, and it's something that, you know, should be on your holiday watch list
And
when it.
Lancaster plays the federal agent that's trying to track him down, and he only sees in black and white until he actually meets this guy and gets to know him. And he's
It's
like,
so
well, I don't
good.
see this as being such a bad thing. You know, he's only doing $1 bills. He's not hurting anybody,
Yeah,
you know.
it's a really good movie.
And the guy
Okay, huh.
actually, the real guy only had to pay $1 and time served when he actually went up.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Yeah, but based on a true story.
What's the title? What does that mean, Mr. 880?
I think 880 was the number. It was like the serial
The
number
serial number of
on
the bill
the
that
bill that he was
kept.
Yeah.
counterfeiting. I think,
Yeah.
and that's why they were count that. That's why they called him that. I think it's
I'm
been a
pretty sure
while.
it's been a while since
It's
we've seen
been
that, but
oh,
yeah.
well over a decade.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, all right.
Yeah, it
Well,
stuck with
it
us.
definitely had an impact. Like, we both were like, man, I can't believe this isn't available. This
I
is like a
know.
great film. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's one of those holiday films like We're No Angels that people just haven't really embraced as good holiday films as they
Right.
should.
That We're No Angels is a
So
great
fun.
Christmas movie.
It
All right.
is.
Well, again, another one I will have to check out at some point. So,
So Frankenheimer, do we want to talk about Frankenheimer and the
yes, let's
five
talk about
Frankenheimer
Frankenheimer.
films and how
Yep.
brilliant all of them are, including Gypsy Moss, which is another one that's
I
really
knew it. Here we go.
underserved.
I knew you were going to throw that one
I
in
have
there.
not seen
Gypsy
Gypsy
Moss.
Moss. I've heard bad things, but it is. Are you going to vouch for it?
I liked it. I really liked it.
Okay.
You know, it promises to be this big action movie. It's not. It's a drama, but it has some incredible aerial photography in it. And
It's skydiving film that's not
right.
action, and you're vouching for it.
Yeah, it's a good film.
I'm just joking with you.
Gene
Acting's
Hackman, right? Gene
amazing.
Hackman,
Just
right?
joking.
Yeah, this was his follow-up to Bonnie and Clyde, Gene Hackman's next role, and he's fantastic in it.
It's
They.
just such a weird selling point. Gene Hackman, next film after
Yes.
Bonnie and
You
Clyde. Not an action film,
want to watch Gene Hackman
skydiving,
jump out of a
but a
plane?
drama.
This is your
Just
movie.
that's
Yeah.
you're not selling it, dude.
Well, I think it's great films.
Valiant
How,
effort,
they
but
did how many did they did what,
five.
five together? Right.
Yeah.
7 Days in May, Gypsy Moths,
The Train. The
Young
Train.
Savages, The
Young
Train.
Savages.
7 Days in May. That is one of the ones that I saw early on. and I fell in love with, and I've always loved ever since. I just find that to be just a crackling great thriller. It features one of my favorites, Frederick March, as the kind of president we all could use. And there's a scene with him and Lancaster where they talk about their differing political views in the Oval Office. And that I never get tired of watching that scene, because Lancaster's character, again, this sort of Curtis LeMay stand-in, is completely convinced of his righteousness and that he feels it is okay to try and take over the government because, as he puts it, the Jordan Lyman, President Drummond Lyman, is a weak sister, as he calls him. And Lancaster really has that gleam in his eye of the true self-deluded person, right? Like a total zealot. And March, and you know, who's already older at this point, and this, you know, he has an even older career than was even you know, had a longer career than Lancaster, matches him, you know, for energy. And it's such a great scene. And that is a terrific movie. So him and Frankenheimer apparently fought a lot, but yet kept working together. So obviously they were, you know, okay with the results, because, and they were able to get past it because The Train is another terrific movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think that everybody says that
it's Birdman of Alcatraz.
I was
Birdman of Alcatraz.
I'm trying there, to yeah. indicate to you that I remembered yeah. what it was by flapping my arms. Because I was thinking, wait, idiot, it's your other favorite. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. I mean, they say that everybody says that they fought with Burt Lancaster.
Yeah. Especially directors, because, you know, he thought.
And actors. Yeah. And especially yeah, everybody.
Especially everybody fought with. I mean, what him and. Kirk Douglas were called the Temper Twins because they both were so cantankerous.
Twins, yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Something like yeah. that. In the traits. Yeah.
And they did seven movies together. But 7 Days in May, that scene between Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster that you were talking about is just such a powerhouse scene. It's like, here you guys, you have these two guys that are at the top of their powers just facing off. It's kind of like that scene we were talking about earlier where it's like, oh, you've got Paul Newman talking to Burt Lancaster. You know, it's just these powerful, two powerful actors doing what they do best.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely love that movie.
Gives me chills every time I see that scene. It really
does. When the president, Drummond Lyman, says, you know, by God, run for office. You know, you're so hell-bent on, you know, loving this country, but you won't use the tools it gives you. You know, like he's just, it's so terrific. And written by Rod Serling, for Pete's sakes. I mean, yeah. Like it's fan. Oh, and Ava Gardner in that as well. Their reunion from the Killers. She's in that film as well.
Yeah, and she allows herself to be photographed in a non-flattering way in that film too. Which is like, whoa. Stars didn't do that back then.
Love that movie. We definitely got to mention Birdman of Alcatraz because that's probably one of his most famous roles.
Yeah,
yeah. He got nominated for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that's a very fictionalized take on the guy. I was doing some reading about the real guy, the Robert Stroud, and apparently he was way more vicious and a bruiser than the genteel version that Lancaster played. But that's okay. It's not a documentary. It's a drama. But he's terrific in that. I mean, again, a guy with this huge hulking frame, right, who's filling the space, and yet he's sort of kindly hunched over and, you know, feeding these birds with the little eyedroppers full of water and stuff like that. And he's always, except for the scene where he kills a guard, it's kind of a big moment, you know, don't do that, everybody.
That's the only brute moment in the film, if I remember correctly.
Kills a guy. Yeah. But just, you know, the gentility that he brings to that. But yeah, that's a terrific movie. That's an absolutely terrific movie.
The day that I got obsessed with Burt Lancaster, I watched a double feature of Birdman followed by Elmer Gantry. So those were the two.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's able to impart so much to that, you know, the anger, you see it kind of sap out of him as he gets older, because it's told over such a long period of this guy's life. And the way he walks changes throughout the film too. Mm-hmm. The way he hunches over. I mean, it's a real acting tour de force, that film. Yeah. I mean, that's one that you can really point to and say, you know, Burt was a great actor.
But it's so unlike a lot of his other roles.
Right. And that's what we keep saying, though. Well, you know, this movie's so unlike all of his other roles.
So versatile.
Yeah.
Right. That's the thing. Right. As I'm going through all of his films, and I'm like, good Lord, there's just so much diversity here. There's just so many different kinds of things, different kinds of movies, and that's why, like I was talking about, like in the intro, like there's no there's no up and down, it feels like. It's all just sort of up. You know, like he arrived with the killers and hits a home run on that, and then just stays current. Now, I'm sure that, as you know, when he was in his when it got to the 70s and he was getting a little older, I'm sure that he, you know, was still thinking of himself as a vital guy, right? And could star in movies, but he was getting pushed a little to be like, okay, and he's more the elder statesman at that point.
The
But
phone guy.
yeah, you know, but yet was still managing to deliver these incredible performances. He's in 1980, right? Atlantic City with Susan
Oh, yeah.
Sarandon, and he's the lead in that movie. And again, there's this guy, he's playing this guy who is scraping to get by. He's running numbers and he's talking on and on about how he shared a jail cell with Dutch Schultz and he's kind of living off of these old glories of being a con man and things like that. Again, for a guy with this big hulking frame, he is wonderfully henpecked in that movie, you know, and he's lusting after Susan Sarandon in 1980, when who wasn't in that point? And he apparently said to Louis Malle, the director, like when he got the script, he said, an actor gets one of these every 10 years if they're lucky. And so he knew what it was. And I just, again, it's like he's able to sell how diminished he was, diminished that guy is, despite the fact you're still looking at Burt Lancaster and he's still 6'4" and he's still this huge guy, but yet he is the way he carries himself. And so he's tremendous in that movie.
Yeah, but for every one of those, there's Go Tell the Spartans, right? Go Tell the Spartans.
Oh,
He
I forgot about Go Tell the Spartan. I didn't
he'd
even,
injured his
you know.
knee, yet he's still running around on this bad
Yeah.
knee, you know, shooting guns, blowing things up, and you know, he's all in on that one. So virile, you know, especially in that era when he was mostly the phone guy. Like in that film, he does so much on a bad knee.
I forgot. I watched that and I forgot that I put it on my list of things that I watched. Yeah, the Vietnam drama. Go Tell the Spartans.
Yeah.
He's Dr. Moreau in a remake of The Island of Dr.
Yeah.
Moreau.
Doctor's in
I
sane.
mean,
Yeah.
amazing stuff. And he is in, there's another movie he did right around this time called Cattle Annie and Little
And
Britches
Little Britches, yeah.
Yes, very
with
weird film.
Amanda Plummer in a lead role, which Hollywood was like, never again. We're not doing that. She's not going to be the star of the movie. He's great in that. And that's, we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get to his final film, is like, and I've mentioned this on other episodes, I'm always fascinated at the idea that like there are actors working today that have been in movies with these legendary people, right? So it's like Amanda Plummer, she's still in stuff. Diane
Yeah,
Lane,
Diane Lane, still in
still in
stuff.
stuff. You know, she's still current. And yet it's like you worked with Burt Lancaster.
I know.
You know? Like, wow, that's, you know, that's just amazing. And I think I tell the story every other episode of Fade Out. The people who regularly listen to the show are tired of me saying it. I've never been on a movie set, and I'm sure it would be deeply unprofessional. But if I was, and I was on a movie with Burt Lancaster, I would be like, I'm not going to go to my trailer. I'm going to sit. And I just, can you just tell me stories? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how would you want to pass up on that? And be like, just tell me, Burt Lancaster, tell me about making Brute Force. What was that like? I would just feel like it would be such an opportunity to hear stories firsthand that you're what a chance we're ever going to have again to hear something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the through lines, though, his entire career, he never did accents, right? Like that was the thing. Whether he was in the French Foreign Legion playing an Italian, like, you know, what is he? He's in the French Foreign Legion in the train, right? And he doesn't have a French
Oh,
accent.
I
I
guess
think
he doesn't, right?
it's a bad thing.
He just was like, I don't do
Look,
accents.
if he can't do it well, he's not going to do it, okay? Because, like I said, with the train, can you imagine if Inspector Clouseau, if that's what he sounded like
Right.
in the movie The Train, it would have been terrible. It would have
Would
been a train wreck,
you
okay?
like a
And
wafer?
no, yeah, no. A message.
A message.
No. So look, if he's not gonna do it well, he's not gonna do it. So
That's
yeah,
fair. That's
I'm
fair.
fine
I mean,
with that.
it's a strong, you know, it's a strong way to approach it. That's just like, you know, I'm Burt Lancaster. I'm not doing accents. That's fine.
You know, I've never seen a quote on him about it. Maybe, so I don't know. Maybe his daughters or daughter, whatever, would have a comment on that. I don't know.
Oh, that was something I wanted to. I saw a quote about it, and it was about Cattle Annie and Little Britches, because apparently his daughter was with him on that shoot, because they're out in the I don't know, they're out in the desert somewhere making this movie, and he had some sort of serious medical ailment. It wasn't a heart attack, but because I know that he had some issues later on, but he had some sort of like gastrointestinal blockage or something, but it was pretty serious. And he had to be flown to a hospital in Los Angeles. They had to get him on a plane and fly, because again, they were in the middle of like the Mojave or something. And they take him to take him to LA airport. They put him in an ambulance, and he's with his daughter. And then the ambulance breaks down on the way to the
Oh,
hospital.
no.
And I don't know what happened, but it breaks down. And Lancaster gets out and starts pushing the ambulance. And his daughter, the quote from the daughter was, "I never could get him to behave." And I just thought that's such a
Oh, my
great.
God. That sounds like a such a Lancaster thing to
I
do.
love that idea of like, "Dad, could you not get out? Are you fat? You're the one there being going to the hospital." And he's like, just this physical guy. I'm gonna push this ambulance now. Like, that's fantastic. So,
On the set of one of the movies, his brother was there working. He was working with him on the set, and his brother had a heart attack and died while they were shooting,
oh
and
my.
refused to stop the production of the movie that day and made everybody keep going and shooting. Like, he didn't want to stop down and kept shooting for the rest of the day, even though his brother died on the set.
Wow.
I mean,
Wow.
which sounds harsh, but I think that was just he was just very like he was brute force.
Yeah, brute force.
Brute force,
Oof.
kind of character he was.
Focus. That is some
Yeah.
focus. So I mentioned
Said he would
earlier.
grieve on his own time, was what he told the.
Oh, not
I
on
remember
wow.
that.
Company time.
Yeah, I
Wow.
believe that
Wow.
if I remember
Wow. Well, he was
correctly.
probably the producer on that one, so I
Yes,
can totally see why.
grieving on
There
his
you go.
own
Right.
time.
He had his own, like, okay, this is costing me money. I can do
Yeah.
this. I can do
Yeah.
this later. So I mentioned he's in Sam Peckinpah's last movie, The Osterman Weekend, which not a great movie, but it features an amazing cadre of actors, and he's good in it. I mean, of course he is, but again, it's an okay movie. But then he does Local Hero, the Bill Forsyth movie. That's another one. That was another video store movie where I watched it 30 years ago. I remember it being good. Everyone says it's great, but I had no memory of it at all. And I rewatched it, and I was like, "Oh yeah, this is wonderful. This is just an absolutely great movie." And he's great in it. He's in the beginning, and then he comes back in at the end, and he kind of brings that. Again, he's the Texas oil man, and they're trying to. He's sending Peter Riegert. Boone from Animal House. He's sending Peter Riegert to this small Scottish town to basically buy it out so they can convert it into this giant oil processing plant. And Lancaster's character has made his money, so now he can be a little bit of kind of a fancy guy, like kind of a sort of professional weirdo. And all he ever
Yeah,
wants to
he's an
talk about,
eccentric for sure in that
eccentric,
role.
that's the
Yeah.
better word for
Yeah.
it, eccentric. And all he ever wants to talk about is the stars. He's obsessed with the constellations and all this stuff. And he comes in and he just brings that kind of movie star razzmatazz to it. And apparently, again, from what I read, he did that when he came to the set. Like he showed up and like autographed things for everybody, like, and just told stories and shared drinks with everybody. And it's like, because everyone in this small Scottish town is like, "My God, it's Burt Lancaster." Like, oh my
Right.
God, you know? So that's just a wonderful movie that he's in late period.
Yeah.
And then he did a couple others. Now, have you either one of you seen Rocket Gibraltar, the one he did with Macaulay Culkin? I did not get to see that one.
I don't
Think we watched
remember.
that
Yeah,
one.
I don't
Okay.
think we watched that
Okay.
one.
That's another one where like Macaulay Culkin is like around, you know? I
Yeah.
mean, I'd love to, like, you were in a movie with Burt Lancaster. What was that like? So then he does Field of Dreams, released on April 21st, 1989. A giant hit, even released in the summer of Batman and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade and Ghostbusters 2, was managed to find room to be a giant hit. I think most people are familiar with the film. I don't really need to get into the plot of it, I don't think. Lancaster plays Archie Moonlight Graham, a guy who played once a one-time baseball game in 1922 for the Giants, but never even got to bat, and he's now become a doctor. And Kevin Costner's character, who wants to build this baseball field in his cornfield, wants to bring all these players back, and he goes and he finds Archie Graham, and is played by Burt Lancaster. And initially, they just have the one scene where Archie Graham is like, it's not that, I really am not interested. I, yes, I could have played more, but I wanted to become a doctor, and that was really my life. And then he comes back for a second scene, which is significant, and we'll talk about in a minute. I had never seen Field of Dreams to this point. I just, one of those movies that just fell through the cracks, even though it's a very famous movie. I just never saw it. I'm going to admit this, everybody. I know this film is regarded as a classic. This did not work for me. This movie. What did you guys, what do you guys think of Field of Dreams?
I think we're right there with you. I mean, we just watched this one again recently too, and I remembered it being better than it actually was. I thought it was, it's kind of a weird film. There's like no explanation as to why he's hearing these voices. You don't get to hear them. So, there's this whole, they're playing with that dichotomy of is he crazy or isn't he for like a very long time. And then they go all in on he's not crazy. Instead of leaving it, I think it would have had much more of an impact if we would have been able to draw that conclusion ourselves. But at the end, it gets kind of very schmaltzy, and it's, there's no denying that he was working under some sort of larger power or something.
I, you know, Charlotte, what do you think? Same.
No, I mean, I agree. I'm not a big baseball fan to start with. Not like that has anything to do with it, really. And also not a huge Kevin Costner fan.
Okay, two strikes
But
to use the
yeah,
proper
two
terminology.
strikes.
One of
Yeah,
the
pun
worst
intended.
narrators in the history of film,
He's
actually. He's terrible. Even in his own films, he doesn't do a good job narrating. Yeah.
another guy who refused to do accents for
Yes,
yeah. Absolutely.
Which after, I think very close after this, we watched Dances with Wolves to sidetrack a little bit, and I thought there's no way this one's gonna hold up. That one held up really
Yeah,
well,
except for the
except for
narration.
the narration,
Yep.
which
Okay, good to
won't do
know.
it. But yeah, it just I don't know. I mean, he's just the whole time he's going into debt building this thing. I'm like, why are you doing this? I don't understand your motivation here. Why you just need some therapy, dude.
Yeah, I mean, he's putting his
Just
family at
I
jeopardy,
just
in
I don't
jeopardy, and it's hard to go along this journey with
yeah
him.
I don't get his motivation, so that's and then it's
I
like
mean, I
yeah.
understand that he's a dreamer, and we should all like dream and aspire to more. There's that whole subtext, but the whole idea of putting your family in jeopardy, like to the point where you're going to get your farm, taken over by the bank
Yeah.
for some ghosts.
For something that only you can see. It's just like, I
Yeah.
don't understand that.
I mentioned off air before we started that like baseball is the only sport I've ever bothered to follow. I don't follow it at all really lately, but it's the only one I've ever bothered to. And I like baseball movies, but I like baseball movies that are about the grit of baseball. Like, Kevin Costner just a year earlier did Bull Durham, and that movie's about the grit of baseball, the grind of it, the day-to-day realities of playing the sport. But the ones that are like the golden shimmery lights behind the players, and they're all like, I just want to play one last game. Like, they're just, that thing just does nothing for me. And this movie is all of that, and it's magical whimsy. And magical whimsy is hard to pull off because I feel like you either get on board or you don't, And there are movies that have that. There are movies that are a very specific kind of tone, and I love them. This one just did. I just sat there going, "What?" First of all, as you mentioned, like Adam, the whole "if you build it, they will come" is like like 2 minutes into the movie, and I'm like, "What? I need a little more."
Well, you haven't even established
Something.
what kind of human being he is at
What
that
world am
point,
I living in? Is it like,
Nothing I hate worse than lack of character development or any kind of motivation for things to happen, and that's so easy to do.
I mean, you could have just had one scene, where it sets up what kind of person he is,
Just something. And then there's
I also
this.
think James Earl Jones going along for the ride is a little weird. I know he's a writer and he's
All those
writing
scenes are
the
very
person.
odd.
Yeah, and then when he decides to die, like at the
He
end,
decides to
yeah,
die.
he's just like, I'm gonna go. I gotta go follow the story, But I mean, by doing that, you're choosing death, right? Like, isn't that, you're not coming back.
And then there's a long sequence in like a town hall where they argue about censorship, Like that, I was like, what? What is happening? Like the whole, I just sat there kind of like, what is happening? But
That
then
feels
Burt
like a
Lang,
subplot that got cut or something,
yeah,
right?
right. Yes, it feels like there was more to or something. But then
This is
Burt
the
Lang,
worst ending to your podcast ever.
yeah, well, you know what? Look, this is the format I chose for the show, right? Some of them are great, but I will say Lancaster gets the one scene and he's great in it, right? And then I watched the film and I went, well, okay, I guess that's okay. And apparently, originally, the director Phil Alden Robinson tried to get Jimmy Stewart, and Jimmy Stewart had not been in a movie in a long time and was not interested. And just for the sake of this show, I'm glad that Lancaster did it. I think it's more plausible that Burt Lancaster as a ex-baseball player. I think Jimmy Stewart would have been a little too old at that
Yeah,
point.
I agree.
And so they have the one scene, right? And I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of a tiny part for Burt Lancaster, but okay. But then he comes back. And for people who haven't seen the movie, I don't want to spoil it too much, although the movie's 30 plus years old at this point. But he comes back in the second scene, and his background as a doctor comes into play because Kevin Costner's daughter gets hit and she, yada yada yada. And whatever. And but as he is going to recede into the cornfield, which is weird. Sounds like a Stephen King thing.
See
He's
into the cornfield.
going to recede into the cornfield. There's this moment where the other players acknowledge him. They're calling him Doc, and you get to have Ray Liotta say to Burt Lancaster, "You like he's like, hey pal, you were good." And that is the last line. It's not spoken by Lancaster. It's spoken at Burt Lancaster, but it is the last thing said to Burt Lancaster in a feature film as he literally disappears into the cornfield. And I will say, in that moment, because I was so invested in Burt Lancaster as a performer, having watched so many of his movies, that worked on me, right? Now that's not within the film, it's the meta of the film. But
Yeah, it's
nevertheless,
so meta.
I was like, hey, you're getting Burt Lancaster. And I almost would love to know, was that in the script? And or did Phil Alden Robinson know, like, okay, this guy, I've got this legend here. Let's give him a nice send off. Not that you would know this is his last film, because he lived on for six more years and he did some TV work.
Lot of
A lot of
There's
TV
lots of
movies and
TV
stuff.
movies, excellent too. Stand
Yeah.
and or not Stand and Deliver.
Separate but Equal and things like that.
Yeah, Separate but Equal.
But nevertheless, I just found it to be it's the kind of clip that I feel like Turner Classic Movies would pull for their in memoriam reel, which is Burt Lancaster being told you were good. It's like, yeah, he was.
He
So
was.
it works. That scene worked for me. So there you
It's a nice button on his career.
Yeah. And it's nice to see him in a big movie, right? A big Hollywood movie that a lot of people went to see in 1989. It was a big hit, had big movie stars. Someone of his stature, it was nice for him to end his career on a big production and, the big kind of Hollywood style. So even though the film didn't really work for me, that's okay because I enjoyed seeing him in it. It was great seeing him interact with Kevin Costner and Ray Liotta, and these are the modern stars. And so, yeah, in a career full of seemingly one success after the next, he went out on a success, which to me is a great thing.
Yeah, a lot of other stars and directors can't say that for sure.
Exactly. 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 So again, it's we've been talking for 90 minutes and we've only talked about some of his films. There's still a ton of other ones. Are there any other ones that we, as we're kind of wrapping up, is there any other ones that we didn't get to that you guys wanted to talk about?
Do we talk about The Swimmer?
We didn't. We never mentioned The
Mentioned
Swimmer.
it briefly. Mentioned it
Well, I
briefly.
mean, can you
I
talk
have
about
not
The
seen it in
Swimmer
a
and
long time.
talking about yourself? Isn't that the
Yeah,
tagline?
that was the tagline.
As long as we mentioned it, for those people yelling.
Yeah, The Swimmer is, well, Charlotte really loves that film. It's an interesting film, very
Is that because
dreamlike.
he's in his trunks the whole time? Is that part of
Yeah,
the appeal
that's
there?
what I always say. I know why you like this film.
No, it's
When he
hard to.
races the horse and beats
Yeah,
it.
no, it's hard to talk about that film with someone who hasn't seen it because you don't want to give anything away.
I mean, I
Or
know the
that will.
premise of it. Like, I know he's literally swimming through the pools
From pool to
across
pool.
the.
I mean, you can honestly watch that movie and still not know what it's about. So
No, but that's the fun thing about that movie is to discuss what you think it's about. So. Have either one of you seen The Rainmaker? I did not get to see that one, the
Oh
one he did with
yeah.
Katherine
Yeah, oh, it
Hepburn.
actually just
Just
restored
a
it. Yeah.
couple years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The Fifth Division one.
Because
Yeah, it's very
I
stagey, but he's great. I mean, it's like a sort of a predecessor to Elmer Gantry in a way, because he's playing a con man of sorts. He's a medicine man, and he's only got a few scenes in it. I mean, it's really more Katherine Hepburn's film than his.
Yeah, and she's completely miscast.
Yeah,
She's
she
supposed to
was.
be in
Oh,
her
really?
mid-20s and
Yeah,
she's like
she's
50.
pushing 50.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah,
Oh,
it's
okay.
almost embarrassing because she's acting like a little kid a lot, you know, like a young person, and it's
Oh,
just like, oh
wow.
gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's very state it's, you know, it's based on a play and it feels like it. Like it never leaves this one setting.
Well, they go outside.
Yeah.
They go inside. They go
I
outside.
had read that Lancaster traded one assignment that he didn't want
Yeah.
to do Rainmaker, which tells me, okay, he must have re that's obviously was must have been very important to him.
Yeah. He's great in that role.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of his, like, I'll do a big one for you as long as I get to do one for me, you know, that kind of deal. So.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. That's, I mean, again, everyone listening, there, if you want to start dipping into his career, there are just so many good movies for you to find. And in every kind of good movie you might want to be in the mood for. Thrillers, westerns. I mean, we didn't even really mention Gunfight at the OK Corral, for Pete's
Another
sakes,
one
you
I've
know, like one of the
seen.
most famous westerns of all time. Just so.
Charlotte just restored that, and the
Nicholson
4K
restored
is now
4K.
available from Kino Lorber on
Yep.
Gunfight at the OK.
That leads perfectly to what the
Shot in
exit
Vista
question.
Vision.
Oh,
Also.
you guys love
Yep.
VistaVision. That leads perfectly to the exit question for you two, which is, if there was one Burt Lancaster movie that you could do a 4K restoration of, what would it be? And again, not limited to what he did for Paramount, because obviously you work for Paramount, but like if you could just pick any Burt Lancaster movie to do the granular restoration of, what would it be?
Well, I had to do some research because you gave me a heads up on this, which I appreciate.
Yep.
So I had to look and see what hasn't already been done. And The Flame and the Arrow has not been done. And that is a Technicolor three-strip title. And that one I would love to do because working on a three-strip Technicolor title is fun. And that one, if you, the only way you can see that right now is on YouTube
Oh no,
or.
Crimson Pirate. Isn't that kind of Crimson Pirate the one that you wanted to do?
No.
Right, sorry to interject. I thought that was
Thank you. So The Flame and the Arrow, as I was saying, is three-strip Technicolor. And I mean, I'd do Crimson Pirate too, but that one, you can only see it on YouTube or a bootleg DVD like we have. And the colors are not great. They're not like they should be. And it deserves better. And it's a really great film. Like we were saying, it's like Crimson Pirate, but maybe not as goofy. And it's got that great scene, like you were talking about, with the big 30-foot pole that's
Yep.
hilarious. And again, it would just be a lot of fun to work on. And it deserves better than what it currently has. I don't know who owns that one.
Warner Brothers.
Is it Warner
Yeah,
Brothers?
it's in the set.
Well, I hope it's not in the set.
Yeah, it is. It's in the Warner Brothers
Is
set.
it? Okay, maybe it is. All right, Warner. Well, if Paramount buys Warner Brother, maybe I'll get to work on
There
it.
you go.
But I hope not.
Yeah,
I
I
hope
mean,
they
three
don't.
strip, you know, the current transfer is, I think, SD only, right? The
Yeah.
and the registrations are off on the three strips, and
Strip. Yeah.
yeah, it's hard to
You know,
do.
and maybe they've done it and we just don't have a release of it
There's
because that's happened to a lot of our titles
that's
at
true.
Paramount. So
Well,
we've worked
and
on a
you
lot
know,
of stuff.
technology's changed too, so.
But working on three strip Technicolor is a joy because it's so pretty. And you get a lot of great colors because they don't fade. Because the three strips are actually black and white records when you recombine them and you get the color. So it's they don't fade and they're beautiful. So that would be the one.
That's a great answer. I said I would love to see when I was watching Crimson Pirate and seeing how faded it was, I was like, this needs
Yeah,
somebody
I
needs to
opted
do
that one
something
too.
with this, you know,
Crimson
because
Pirate needs to
basically
get
I'll
up.
do any of them. I told this story once. When I first got the position I'm in as the director of restoration at Paramount, I sort of fast-tracked some of the Burt Lancaster films that were still in the backlog. Probably shouldn't have done that, but I didn't done that. Anyways, we were working on the audio for some of the, and there were only like three or four, but we were working on the audio, and the audio engineer said, "I've been working
working on a lot of Burt Lancaster films lately. And the person I was with shot me this look because they knew exactly why he had been working on so many Burt Lancaster films. And of course, she ended up telling him why he'd been working on so many. But it was funny. I totally got busted for scheduling all of them in a year. So
That's
busted.
amazing. That's great.
Anyway,
That's
yeah.
fascinating. So I said I love the Perf Damage show. I find all this stuff about film restoration and all of the all just the history of it all to be absolutely fascinating. And like, just I mean, you know, you guys, anyone again listening to this that doesn't listen to Perf Damage, check it out because it's you guys do amazing. The show is fantastic. Both the video version and the audio version. I love the cameos with dogs and things like that. But just the talking about the VistaVision and the restoration episode on White Christmas. That's one of my all-time favorite movies. And so that is just it was like an amazing thing to hear you talk in detail about restoring this film and just the idea of like. These things exist and they were created in a way that could make them look beautiful forever if just treated correctly, you know, if just given the proper restoration and things like that. The information is all there. The stuff that was shot with this technology that's 80, 70 years old, and yet it's all the information you need to make it look beautiful and brand new is right there. You just need the proper TLC.
Yeah, thank you. Well, VistaVision, it couldn't be appreciated in the 50s like it can now with 4K and home video, and I'm glad that people are getting the chance to fully see what the engineers were able to come up with back then. Because again, by the time it hit the screen in the 50s, people couldn't really tell the difference, but by the time it hits your screen at home now, if you have a 4K setup, you can see the difference. And so I'm glad that 7 years later, people are finally getting to appreciate what the engineers came up with.
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
a lot of those lost films are films that just haven't been curated and taken care of and brought up to, you know, the current technology. Like every time new technology comes out, it's important to bring, you know, not only just key films, but other films along with it. And unless you do that, then they become lost films like Crimson Pirate, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing stuff. Why don't you, as we're starting off, why don't you tell everyone about where they can find Perf Damage and can you just talk a little bit about their most recent episode, the Sunset Boulevard one?
Sure. Well, you can just go to perfdamage.com or you can go to, you know, Perf Damage on YouTube. That's our preferable way to listen to or watch Perf Damage because we have a lot of clips and interactive things that you can actually see our examples for. But yeah, well, Sunset, we did some fun stuff with that one. Charlotte just finished restoring the new 4K version of that.
Sunset Boulevard.
Yep.
I didn't
And
know that there was a deleted, the opening was a different opening. And so you have that whole alternate opening with the
well, kind
script.
of a
And that was amazing
recreation of
stuff.
it.
Recreation of it.
Yeah,
Right,
so
right, right, right.
the footage from the alternate opening for Sunset Boulevard had been on the DVD in the past, so we had found that footage years ago, so people in the archive had. But and the script had also been around, but we in the archive, just sort of as a joke, we recorded the audio for that, and Adam did the main voice just a couple of years ago, just, hey, let's sort of recreate what this would look like. Although originally they had faces, they were recording, actual corpses, faces and eyes and stuff like that. Whenever Billy Wilder actually shot the thing, we just shot sort of toe tags and things like
Yeah,
that
well,
to make it a
none
little
of that
less
stuff
grotesque.
exists anymore. So
Yeah.
we don't actually know exactly how it would have
No, and the
leaked yet.
music is a little different and all that, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so yeah, we recorded just a little funny kind of thing, like, hey, this is what the original opening Sunset Boulevard could have kind of looked
Yeah,
like.
and we just went off the
So
script, the
yeah,
shooting script that
just for
existed.
fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we put that in our restoration video. It was kind of a last minute kind of add in, but yeah, people seem to really enjoy that just
Yeah.
to see what it could have looked like, because yeah, it was originally completely different. So that was fun. Yeah, but we have a whole restoration episode about all the stuff that went into the 2025 restoration of Sunset Boulevard, which just came out on 4K UHD, which you can buy. And
Yeah, we try to give a little history too. I usually generally handle the history type stuff, and then Charlotte talks about the restoration. And then, oh, you actually played a game too, trying to find the
Yeah, we show some missing
missing
frames.
frames. Yeah, that was kind of fun.
Yep.
Little
So
exercise. Yeah.
yep, that's what we do.
Yeah, I love the show, and I found all that stuff so fascinating. So, well, thank you both for doing this. I really appreciate it. I will. pull back the curtain, everybody. Both Charlotte and I work for Paramount in different permutations, and I always feel a little weird about using like work email to hit somebody up to be on the show, because it's like I don't know how professional that is or not, and I'm always hoping that the person who I send the email to is receptive and is not like, what the hell you get. But luckily, you were very receptive, and so now we're here. We got a chance to do it. So thank you both for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was happy you reached out.
Yeah.
Well, we always love talking to fellow movie nerds.
Yeah, and also we love your show too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I said this was I say this again on nearly every episode, is like I have like 17 streaming channels like everybody else that I'm paying for every month, and sometimes I still can't decide what I want to watch, right? Because there's just too much, and I'm just like, all right, I guess I'll just watch Jaws for the 90 millionth time because I can't think of anything better. Not that Jaws is not worth you're watching, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And this show, I didn't know that I was doing this for myself when I started it 5 years ago, but like by allowing the guest to pick the subject, that's forcing me to watch stuff that I would not normally think to watch because I have to do it for the show.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Right. And so I'm forcing myself to watch stuff that I'm like, wow, I'm glad I saw that. And so it's like A Child Is Waiting. Like I mentioned earlier, I would never in a million years want to sit through a 2-hour drama about Burt Lancaster working at a children's
I've pulled it off the shelf and put it right back on. I don't know how many times.
Yeah, right.
I might actually watch it.
It just, you're like, why would I do this to myself? You know, why I'm going to cry? Why do I want to do it? And yet it was
so many times during The Leopard.
Yeah, but yet it was.
Yeah, plenty of times to say it.
It would have never occurred to me to watch Crimson Pirate. And now I'm like, I would recommend that to anybody, right? Anyone
now
that's like
The Flame and the Arrow after.
Oh
that.
Man, I got to watch Flame there. But anyone that's like, oh, I love Raiders and I love The Princess Bride, I'd be like, if you like older movies, there's one you have got to check out, The Crimson Pirate. So now I've seen all these great Burt Lancaster movies, and that I'm a better person for having done it. So thank you for picking this, even though it was a daunting task because the guy has so many great movies.
Yeah.
I'm glad I saw as many as I did. And I still, again, Flame and the Arrow, there's still more to watch. So, again, thank you both. And thank you all for listening. You can find all the back episodes, of course, on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can find the show on any podcatcher of your choice. You can find us on Blue Sky at Fade Out Pod. And if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, of which Fade Out is a part, go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Monique D, Don McWaters, Mark Balbus, plus David Gutierrez, Gord Tolton, Al, and Mike Atchison for their support of Fade Out and the Fine Water Podcast Network. So thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back with another episode next month, but we've reached the end of this particular script. So for now, it's time to fade out.
What's next, Rick?
Best actor.
Who's been nominated?
Well, Tony Franciosa, Tony Quinn, Marlon Brando, Charles Laughton, Alec Guinness.
Well, who else?
Well, that's it.
I guess, Burt, you haven't been nominated this year.
No, you haven't been either, Kirk.
Congratulations.